Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 321 of the Roguecast, recorded February 9th, 2021. There are two Luigis inside you. All right, we're back. We're recording. It's me and Nick and Dave, which
yep.
is... It's been a while since it's been all of us, right?
Yeah, we're on the cusp of a winter storm.
Did we do that last week?
Wasn't it last week?
Been a while, except for last week when we also did this.
You're just referencing to the greatest podcast never heard.
I am. My other podcast, my TV Dudes podcast, we were short a guy this week, which never happens. And I believe in my head, we were down a person last week here.
Well, it had been squirrely prior to that. We're going to give you this one, Randy.
That's true.
Is it also possible that Dave and I have swapped chairs and
yeah,
we're sitting
that,
in different positions?
Too. But also, between us, there's a lot of podcasts in this room. I did three podcasts last week. Dave, you did at
just
least one.
Well, the store one and then one text
so
check one.
That's two, Dave.
Yep.
Store
just,
podcast is real.
This is our interview with the Star Trek communist.
You interviewed the Star Trek communist.
I did.
Over on Text Trek.
Yeah, Text Trek. Y'all check it out. It was actually a super good interview. I don't think it's up just yet, but he was a great guest.
Nick, you don't have an extra podcast right now, but you have in the past.
I have.
But... Yeah, what's the matter? Are you afraid of podcasts now?
No,
you
I'm
lost
just...
the edge?
Yeah, I've lost the edge of podcasts. I'm not afraid to admit it.
We need Carl Weathers to come in and train you back into it, and then y'all can dance in the sea together.
Carl Weathers, Happy Gilmore style?
Yeah,
I was
sure.
thinking Arrested Development, make it a Stew style.
Well, there's that as well.
Thinking Rocky, but...
I like that Carl Weathers has a type. That's what he does.
Yeah. I was actually thinking Mandalorian style.
Mando!
No. Store-wise, there's been interesting stuff in the games this week. We got the new all-ages RPG, Magical Kitties Save the Day.
Yes.
I
just
had some customers
to clarify, that's kitties, like little kitties, not kitties like they used to have in 50s Christmas songs.
Right.
I had some customers come in over the weekend who were super excited about that and bought it.
Yeah.
I'm excited for them to come back and tell me what they thought.
Yeah, you're
our ex-staffer Kate messaged me and she's like, what's the deal with the kitties saving the world?
Yeah, you're playing Magical Kitties. And you save the world, and it says that there's things like aliens and wizards, and I feel like there was something else notable.
Yeah. I believe they are trying to protect their humans.
Yes.
It's like the humans are kind of their dim-witted little peeps, and they're like, I guess we better take care of them.
I feel like this is the less depressing versions of Beasts of Burden.
Yes.
Yes, it would almost have to be.
There's a new unlock, which is the Escape Room games. They started making more of these.
This is one of those 3-in-1 ones, right?
Yeah, they used to do like little tiny ones, and now they do 3-in-each-1, which I think is a better way. This one is the Mythical Adventures, or Mythic Adventures? Mythic Adventures.
Yeah.
It's got In the Clutches of Hades, where you are Alex, a slave in Greece during antiquity.
It looks like from the art, it looks like you, among other things, you get to escape like with Icarus-type mechanical wings and
you may be getting out
stuff.
Of the labyrinth with Ariadne, maybe.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Then there is Professor Mord's Animal-O-Matic, which looks like more of their clown guy who's been in like...
Yeah,
years.
They're kind of like a cartoony one. To me, that always looked like... what was it? I don't know, like almost getting like trapped in Roger Rabbit kind of...
Yeah.
Like an anarchic cartoon.
It was supposed to be a good one. Squeak and Sausage was the first one.
Yeah.
And then there's one, Around the World in 80 Minutes, which has a quote as it describes... I made the bet with these gentlemen from the Reform Club that we will travel around the world in 80 days. Passepartout out. Hurry. The world awaits Phileas Fogg's masterstroke. So anyway,
that's a naughty tape, I think.
Three
the
very
Phileas
different...
Fogg masterstroke.
three very different unlock adventures.
If you've never done these are really fun. They're like kind of like an hour-long escape room type thing. If you got a few people in your household you can get together with, it's an ideal like safe at home escape room.
Yep. Pathfinder has a new set of minis, the Darklands Rising, with a really cool gold dragon.
Oh yeah.
And then there's a two player version of a game, Cthulhu Wars, which is a miniature game where you're playing basically one of the great old ones fighting mm-hmm. the other ones, and this is the two player miniatures version, which is kind of cool.
Nice.
Also, we didn't talk about this. And I guess maybe next week we'll go through and find the highlights, but there's a lot of good stuff on the inventory sale this year.
Yeah.
Like, some notable, like, games and comics that I think we were all fans of.
I don't want to say what it is because I want to buy them later. No, there's, they're really good, an exceptionally high number of graphic novels this year, I think. And I've been pleased to see people finding stuff, though. I feel like because people are looking for such odds and ends things, and I've seen everything from people looking for Attack on Titan, Guardians of the Galaxy. Now I'm going to suddenly blank on it, but like, but people have got some good gets.
This is the first year we last couple of years have skipped going through the all ages section and the diverse voices section, so we also
had a little build up,
and we went ahead and went through that this year. So there's some stuff from there, although I think a lot of that got snapped up fast, the diverse voices and the all ages stuff.
Yeah,
but there's still some of that back there, and a lot of Marvel and DC.
Yeah,
and also in the board games. I was noting that this was my first board game trip to BGG Con, where I learned the harsh lesson that good games don't necessarily sell. And so there's a bunch of like my favorite games from about 3 years ago are now on our clearance table.
Right, which means that if you need a heads up on something, a recommendation, Randy might be able to point you
to it. I can point you to some.
We're also doing still doing curbside, and yes, we're also if you don't want to come in and peruse the tables, you can always tell us what kind of things you're enjoying or you like.
Give us a budget and we'll find
give us a budget
stuff.
And we will curate some cool stuff for you.
Yeah, we did that for a couple people.
Yeah, we did.
Did we, I can't remember, did we post pictures of these online? Or
there's some pictures of the tables are up on the website.
Some of those things will have sold since then, but yes, you can kind of get a sense of it.
Yep. All right, going to news, there was a Super Bowl on Sunday, and so they put a bunch of trailers and stuff out.
Yep.
So we watched
for a minute, I was like, are we about to do a sports segment? We can't do that.
I don't even know who played.
I think
Chiefs and the
Buccaneers.
Yeah.
The Buccaneers won because they had an old quarterback. This is everything I picked up from Facebook. That's all I know about the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I watched people grousing about it while they watched. Yeah. And then I watched the commercials.
We do have customers who like the Buccaneers, so. And Tom Brady. And
I have no opinion. I just don't care about sports at all at this point. But they did make trailers. And we watched a couple of those. The big one, I think, is Falcon and Winter Soldier got a new trailer.
Yep.
You know, if WandaVision, which is proving to be pretty, I think, crowd pleasing in a surprising way, but if that's their kind of esoteric one, this one sort of brings a lot of the traditional fun of the Marvel Universe via what looks to be a buddy cop format.
Yeah, buddy cop format.
Like a very 80s kind of vibe to it in a good way.
Also, sort of a continuation of the vibe that they've done with Civil War and Winter Soldier, very high concept. A mastermind of evil, you might say, because it's the return of Baron Zemo.
But have they done they haven't done a straight up buddy cop movie, right?
The closest was actually Captain Marvel. Nick Fury and Carol essentially teaming up.
Yeah.
I think that's the closest I've seen.
I agree. Yeah.
This kinda cool. This one is, I guess, just a little bit more traditional in that sense. Definitely a more so than in Captain Marvel, they don't like each other.
Yeah.
But they probably kind of like each other.
They really don't like each other.
No, they're going to... By the end of it, though,
by the end of Endgame, they were fine with each other. That's the vibe I got. True.
I'll say this. I didn't get the vibe from the trailer that they hated each other. I got the vibe that they antagonized each other,
I think they know which buttons to push.
And it was kind of that fun to watch and antagonism. Yeah. I was thinking as I watched a little bit of Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah.
When they have the stare-off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's, like, some A-list, you know, movie action in this.
Yeah.
Like, crazy stuff with, like, camera tracking Falcon while he, like, flies under, like, an 18-wheeler.
Yep.
Just some super cool shots.
Also, they're using Baron Zemo, and they gave him... He's got the costume.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
He has his fur coat.
He has his fur coat and his mask.
Yep. We also will be seeing U.S. Agent.
And Flag Smasher. This is the Grunwald Captain America stuff. Yeah. Like, all the Cap stuff that I grew up on is in here.
I'm just happy they didn't kill Daniel Brühl at the end of Civil War.
Yeah, me too.
So they can actually... He can somehow either have formed the Thunderbolts for the government, and then this is him sort of subverting that to his own...
I don't think
so. Who is the person you're talking about?
Zemo.
What's his name in there?
The actor's name is Daniel Brühl.
Oh, okay. That's why I was like, I don't know that as in the name of
the
Zemo.
Name.
Got it.
He's a great actor. But, I mean, you don't think that's the case?
No, I don't think it's Thunderbolts. I think they might do Thunderbolts, but I think right now he is operating on his own. I think he's going to be doing his destabilization thing.
You know, one thing...
I don't think they're going to retread that, because he's already done it. He basically...
I don't know where you would get Thunderbolts from.
I'm just like, he was in prison. He was actually like under like super lock and key.
Yeah.
If they didn't like do some sort of want to utilize him because he is like a special forces like spec ops, and he's the one person who's taken down the Avengers.
Yeah,
because he split them.
I don't know. I'm weirded out by the notion of like the government deciding to go after what?
Just think of like Thunderbolt Ross wanting to utilize Zemo for some purpose.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't see it.
Well, one thing I would be curious to see is whether there are like deeper cuts in all of these where, you know, there's lots of kind of some wild speculation about WandaVision. Everything from Doctor Strange, Nightmare, Mephisto. Mm-hmm. and crazier stuff too. And if they had a reveal like that, then I could see them like kind of wanting to have some surprises in all of them.
Yeah,
I don't think they're, you know, clearly their formats are going to be very different, but there could be big surprises like that to all of them, like sort of a secondary stage, the same way that all of the credit outros for Marvel, the
Quest for the Shield kind of thing. If U.S. Agent is going to throw his hat in the ring for the Shield, because they're doing the thing, and I think some people are really mad about this, that Sam is not Captain America in this.
Right.
That basically it's like Steve offered him the Shield, but he doesn't know that he's worthy of it. And I like that.
Well, the title of the show is Falcon and Winter Soldier. Yep. And, you know, I have this feeling that, yeah, like, the show could essentially end with that decision, and then the next time we see him will be in a movie as some version of Cap.
Right.
And I think that'd be fine. I don't think he's necessarily getting shut out. He is getting his own series here. Yeah. It's just a question of, like, are they going to give him the Cap role?
And they do show him like throwing the shield and practicing with it and that kind of stuff. This
looks
great.
And I have a feeling they are not giving away everything in the trailer.
No, that's probably true. Nick, you were saying you were hoping it was Madripoor. I feel like it's probably South Korea and maybe a nod to Black Panther.
I'm sure it is, but introducing Madripoor would be a really fun way.
I would love to have Madripoor in the MCU.
Would be starting to lay the seeds for X-Men stuff. Yep. You know, not that that's not shouldn't be a playground for all the characters, but...
Did they ever go to Madripoor specifically... in, like, the Fox stuff? I can't remember.
No, they never used Madripoor in the Fox stuff that I saw. But I also haven't seen the last Dark Phoenix, so I don't know what happens in Dark Phoenix.
I don't think they went in Dark Phoenix.
I don't think so, although I have this weird sense that they did.
They did a weird Genosha, where it was sort of backwards technology kind of thing.
I was about to say, did they
Genosha was like a more of like a small kind of commune.
Yeah, that Magneto did.
Yeah, I still like how they did it, but it is that sort of sense of everything was a little small.
So they did it just to ruin it? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, it was good.
Depending on the implications of the last WandaVision, who the hell knows what that
that shit's canon, Randy. get used to it.
No.
Although I would love for them to do Madripoor, and who's in control of Madripoor? Is it Viper?
Tiger.
Tiger. Oh, man. If we get Tiger on the screen...
I don't know who that is.
She's some lady named Tiger.
The only Tiger-themed villain I like is... Flying Tiger
from
Spider-Woman.
Yes.
And that is only because it was one of the earliest comics I got, and it had cool art by Steve Lealoha.
Yeah.
Who I don't know what happened to that guy, but he was a pretty cool artist.
Just if Zemo can continue to do this and we get some sort of mansion siege somewhere down the line.
It's going to have to be an Avengers Tower siege or something else, but yes.
No, they're a compound now.
Yeah, they do have the compound.
What are they, a cult?
Yeah.
All right. By the way, I feel like Mr. Hyde would be a fairly... And some of the other characters. Yep. Like, you could do versions of them without too much trouble.
Yep, for sure.
What's that guy's name? Calvin
Zabo.
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 And then we saw the trailer for The Nevers, which was Joss Whedon's thing for HBO that is no longer Joss Whedon.
Right. He kind of, like... I mean, arguably, he fell a little bit out of public favor, but he also, he kind of, like, said creative burnout, I think.
Yeah.
Whatever the case, he ain't showrunning it anymore, but it came from him.
And it very much looks like Joss Whedon. It's all the girl power.
Yep. How would you sum it up, Randy? You said...
What I said is it looks like feminist Victorian X-Men.
Yep. That's right. What do they call them in there?
The Touched?
The Afflicted or something?
The Afflicted.
Yeah, and I didn't quite get a sense from the trailer of like exactly how they acquire it.
They don't seem to know. It's a little
thing. It's like an X gene or
yeah.
But like somebody has flame powers, somebody has cold powers, or somebody's like a.
Was it a little steampunky too? Because it's I saw like a vehicle like that was not horse drawn carriage.
I think maybe one of them her power is like make technology
like forge.
Like forge.
Like Victorian Forge.
Victorian Forge.
I'm looking at the cast and I don't recognize a lot of them, but there are some Whedon staples in there. Olivia Williams plays a character. Dollhouse? Yeah, she's the madam from Dollhouse.
Always like her.
Oh, yeah. She's great.
It also looks like Nick Frost is in there somewhere. Oh, nice. And a couple of character actors like Dennis O'Hare that I know.
And it looks
interesting.
I'm not a Victorian guy. Period pieces are kind of usually a no-go for me. But I thought this was a good trailer. HBO has a pretty good track record, so I'm looking forward to checking it out.
I'm kind of waiting on the reviews on it, but I'm open to it.
Then we get a teaser for Old, which is the new M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah.
I find it somewhat delightful that basically everything they were doing, like they were twisting the words, is like they're just now just showing, like, that's what he does. It's a twist.
Yes. Literally, yeah. We'll show the title of something and twist it.
Start twisting.
Contort it.
Yeah.
I thought that was supposed to be like the movement of a clock. So it was.
That makes more sense, maybe. But I thought it was just dumb twists.
You know, he does like wheels within wheels. Clock is the ultimate wheel within wheels, by the way. Now, this is like a teaser trailer. It was like a 30-second thing, probably no more than that, or not much
and
more.
And knowing Shyamalan, we see this weird beach that people are growing old on.
We see the concept.
Yeah, there's definitely more to
it. Yeah, is it like a vacationing family and kind of this like somewhat idyllic-looking sort of...
They're little kids with them, and then the little kids go away, and they come back, and they're like teenagers or 20-somethings.
Yeah. Anybody who's seen the old Star Trek episode where Kirk and all them dudes get old has seen these kind of things before. I'm sure they've
Kirk and them get old.
I've seen other versions. The Deadly Years was what that episode was called, by the way, which is cooler than old. But I have this feeling, like, just knowing Shyamalan, that this probably is like has multiple meanings or something like that.
What was his last one? Was it Glass? Glass was his last one?
Yeah, I think Glass was the last thing he did.
I guess so.
I really enjoyed.
I thought there was something else in the mix.
He's doing a TV show on Apple Plus.
Okay, that was probably what I'm thinking of.
Or Servant, which I'm actually really enjoying. Oh, okay. And then he did The Visit, which I liked The Visit quite a bit.
Yeah, that was
before.
Yeah.
That was a creepy, weird horror movie.
Yeah, so I'm saying he's on his way back up.
Well, he has been, arguably, for a few years now.
Yeah.
Split was for sure a notable one. You know, I don't think at this point, though, like, if somebody's like, I hate Shyamalan, I'm not going to try and convince you otherwise.
No, right.
And I can't tell from this, like, there wasn't enough here to go on.
Yeah.
Like, if it was just what it showed, I'd be like, well, that's kind of trite. But I doubt it's just what it shows. Right. So I'm interested enough. Like, basically, it's another one where, I don't know if they'll screen it for critics. They probably want to... kind of obfuscate his
or maybe he's just like, screw it, I'm gonna give you the twist now so you can just not have to.
I will as with Glass, I will watch it 2 years late on HBO Max after you guys have told me I should watch it.
Fair enough. That seems reasonable, because I generally, you know, I feel there's actually a lot more. The dynamics of his movies beyond just the twist stuff usually intrigue me. I rewatched The Village lately and I got really enjoyed quite a bit about it, even though it does have some It's a slightly lesser light, I think, but I like that quite a bit, and I was reminded,
I like the eeriness in that, just like the of the commune.
There's also some just interesting conversations or how they stage something. What was that guy's name? Joaquin Phoenix's character is an interesting sort of protagonist. You know, he's like the, you know, kind of weird, strong, silent type, which is not something you get too often. He literally doesn't like to talk. But the scene where he confesses his love to her in this kind of weird outpouring is a really, like, sweet scene.
I agree.
And there's a lot of that in there. Fingers crossed. I hope it works out for Shyamalan.
I believe I'll see it after I see the other one we watched the trailer for, which is Willy's Wonderland, which is Nicolas Cage, so a strong, silent type, who makes a deal to get his car fixed by washing out Willy's Wonderland, which looks like a rundown Chuck E. Cheese.
Yep.
And it seems like there's some teenagers or whatever, 20-somethings, who are like, hey, no, it's a human sacrifice. You're being sacrificed to these puppet creatures. And then he goes on a rampage inside the Willy's
Wonderland. He seems like he's not too afraid of them.
No.
Which is funny because, yes, this is clear, like, anybody who's got kids, I think, knows about Five Nights at Freddy's, the video game that is basically horror Chuck E. Cheese kind of stuff.
Yep.
That with all ages friendly but still scary. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I think they were kind of like imagining, like, well, what would Nicolas Cage do if he were in there? He wouldn't be scared at all. He'd kick the shit out of him, which appears to be what happens in the trailer.
Yeah, it reminds me of the trailer for that came out, what, a couple of, like, 6 months ago? The Banana Splits trailer?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that was just a direct-to-TV thing.
Yeah.
But
this
I was
looks like a better version of that. And also,
well,
you
I
get
think Nicolas Cage
screaming.
Will elevate it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's weird because he literally, it looks super Nicolas Cagey, and yet he does not speak in the trailer.
What if he doesn't speak the entire movie?
I mean, I could see them pulling it off. He could just be all grunts and screams. You did see at least that. But I think I want to hear him say crazy shit.
Well, he's Wonderland grunts and screams.
Yeah, I want to see him singing the theme song manically while blood sprays from these living creatures that have come to life as he smashes them apart.
I'm just saying, it hits VOD on the 12th, which I believe is
Friday.
I mean, I'm going to probably wait to see what
the odds are. I think the odds are that there's a brutal fight scene in a ball pit somewhere.
I think
he starts to get up and a clawed hand pulls him back down.
I feel like there's at least a 60% chance.
I think that sounds about right. Anyway, it looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
60% chance of ball pit fights?
Yes.
With scattered showers.
Of stale pizza.
There's a... there is a Skull Island anime series coming to Netflix. There's also a Pacific Rim.
Yeah. I was just going to say that because I put that on my list.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, this looks really interesting.
Pacific Rim has a kind of neat setting and world. I'm interested in that probably more than the other. But
yeah. I'm curious about a Skull Island one. I'm sure it's going to be all the monster stuff without the 70s music, which is, in fairness, half the reason we watch Skull Island.
That's true. But it's a pretty watchable movie. One of the more watchable kaiju movies for me of late.
Yeah.
So it is just Kong of Skull Island, not tied to Kong versus Godzilla specifically.
It's just called Skull Island. I believe it is going to be free.
So there's the local natives population, which they could do a sort of deeper dive on that, reveal more about some of those characters.
Could be his mom and dad.
Yeah, we know we saw their bones somewhere, and there's lots of creepy creatures there. Yep. They could also sort of build up the mythology a little bit, kind of reveal more detail about what had been happening there over the years.
What if it's all one story, 12 episodes about the crazy fighter pilot played by what's his name,
John C. Reilly?
I was gonna say, then that's even better. I think you can't go wrong with having more of
him. As long as John C. Reilly comes back and voices him.
Yeah,
John C. Reilly voices
him. I don't want the half-assed version of him.
It's like Castaway on a kaiju island.
Yes. You guys came to the wrong place.
We're all going to die.
Sure are nice guys.
Gal Gadot has a spy thriller called Heart of Stone coming to Netflix, which is notable for a few things, but one of them is that it's written by Greg Rucka.
Yep. Excited for that.
So. And last thing he touched, Old Guard turned to gold.
Did pretty well, yeah. So, if you like Gal Gadot, even after Wonder Woman 84.
Thanks for the editorialization. Randy, is she alive in the Fast and Furious franchise? Or did
no, she got hit. Well, she died, but in a way that doesn't make any sense, because I think there
it's
was...
the kind of thing they survive?
She falls off a plane... But they've all fallen off things.
I mean, if Han is alive and he, exploded in a car...
Yeah.
Michelle Rodriguez died, in quotation marks, by falling
off a
car.
People in the Fast and Furious movies die the way X-Men die.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we all know that physics don't work in the Fast and Furious world. So
she could show up again there, too. But anyway,
I don't think she will.
Her star has gone up a little bit at that point.
I think she's outgrown it.
But, Randy, do you know the premise of this?
I don't have it handy, no.
Okay. I'm down for her in a spy thriller.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's going to be, a heightened thing, or, kind of more like his, what was his book, that was his realistic spy one?
Oh, Queen and Country.
Queen and Country, yeah. Is it going to be more like that?
I don't know.
I don't, he is not usually a action spy guy,
at
least... Not usually.
But Old Guard is very action-y.
But
so
he does do action stuff.
And I'm going to go back a little bit. I don't think she's above it. I think she's great friends with Rock and Ryan Reynolds.
Okay, cool, doing
a movie with them.
Let me just see if I can remember a scene from the past. Was there not a movie where they needed to get someone's fingerprints to open a safe or whatever? And so they got him to slap her ass.
Yes.
She did that. She was like, I got this.
Yeah. She did that.
Well, her character did that. Gal Gadot didn't. I don't think she didn't request that scene.
I bet she did.
From Latin Jack Ryan.
I'm going to guess not.
She's like, look, I'll do the movie, but I need a 20-foot trailer. I need M&Ms with no green M&Ms, and someone's got to put their fingerprints on my ass. And they were like, well, this is weird, but also, that's in The Rock's contract.
They actually didn't show it. And it is Latin Jack Ryan, so they're
Right. I don't know if people know who we're talking about here, but if you've seen, which one was it?
Clear and Present Danger.
Clear and Present Danger. He was the bad guy, his Latin counterpart, and an actor who often plays, who's often played kind of bad guys.
Yeah.
But, and
almost
is really good at it.
Exclusively. I don't think he's played like one good guy.
At some point,
I always like him on screen, though. He's a great presence.
Yeah, he's great.
Anyway, I'm not sure if Gal Gadot will be like, I really want to go back to that movie.
Fast 10.
But those also movies do also make bank in insane ways.
It would make sense if Fast 10 was about them coming together because you fasten things.
I like to imagine that they would do a pun that awful.
Also, Fast 9, my friend Les pointed this out, is technically fine. So this
they
is
did
fun.
Have a Super Bowl teaser.
Did
for
they?
Fast 9,
yeah. I didn't watch it.
Showed Jordana Brewster back in action, so I'm excited.
Now that you mention this, I hope that Gal Gadot is in the next one. I want the family has to get together, and after they've been revealed to be alive and not dead.
And no one dies.
Yeah. I mean, Charlize Theron is in the Fast
and
franchise
CG,
now.
Somehow they're going to bring Paul Walker back.
Paul Walker will return to...
Yes.
Oh, boy.
I can make a joke, but now I'm not going to.
All right, the Blade movie, they should announce, is going to be penned by Watchmen's Stacey Ose-Kafur.
Yep.
Which is great because Watchmen was great. So I'm excited about this.
Was she the main writer?
No,
part of the writer's room?
She's one of the staff writers.
Okay, because I know that was like probably a
Yeah, Lindelof was the showrunner of that, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yep.
But that's a pretty good get, and that speaks well to it.
I wonder what they'll do with Blade, because Blade was actually a pretty solid movie, as all things go. Like,
I was talking about it with a customer the other day, and there were like rumors that it's going to be PG-13, and he's like, "Blade's got to be R," and it was part of what made the movie, though. There was swearing, there was gratuitous nudity. It was kind of pulp.
There's
some nudity.
There's just blood. I don't remember any nudity.
Is there not some nudity in the opening club scene?
No, it's just like a woman drenched in blood.
There's a porn star who's playing the actress who's playing the vampire.
All right, there's like a blowjob going on in that scene.
No, there's nothing in there.
That dude's getting
I just watched.
He's not.
I guarantee it. It's not like it's like porn style, but that is occurring.
No, it's not. They're just driving the car.
We're talking about Blade.
Yeah.
Opening scene.
Yes.
In the club.
Yes.
All right. We'll watch that when we get off of this.
There's just a blood rave.
Yeah, it's just a blood rave.
Who is that actor who's in your favorite TV show, Randy?
Are you thinking of porn parody of Blade?
The guy from Terriers.
Is it Donald Logue?
Yeah, it's Donald Logue. That's right. He plays Deacon Frost.
Yes, this is not a conversation I expected to have, but he is getting a blowjob in the opening of this movie.
I think you're wrong, actually.
I think you're wrong, too.
All right, well, it's a weird thing for me to remember, but I do insert one of those in just about everything I'm watching. Yeah.
Randy can just call up Donald Logue and ask.
That's true, I won't call up Donald. If you listen...
Just write blowjob Y or N.
Yeah, Blade blowjob Y or N.
Did you guys like Blade, by the way? I'm just curious.
Blade? I did, actually. I don't know if I haven't gone back to it in a while.
Light, yes. I feel like it's almost like the John Wick movies, which I don't really love. I could kind of take or leave it, but if I was watching it, I'd be like, oh, that was actually pretty good. And it was at the time it was a little bit before Matrix, and he had these kind of slightly superhuman, maybe a little CG augmented leaps and fights and stuff like that. And the action choreography was really very strong in it. The pretty strong soundtrack.
I'm forgetting the actor who plays him, but Whistler.
Chris Christopherson.
Yeah, he was great in that.
Yeah, he was.
Yep.
But Blade 2 was Guillermo del Toro, and I didn't like that.
I like Blade 2 a lot.
And Blade Trinity was pretty awful.
Had Ryan Reynolds as Hannibal King.
It did.
And does it Jessica Biel as, Whistler's daughter,
I believe? Yeah, and then one of the dudes from Prison Break played for Dracula, I think.
It was,
Is it Captain Cold, or what's his name?
Not Captain Cold, but,
Heatwave?
Heatwave.
It was, right?
What is his name?
It's that guy.
Yeah, it's him.
Yeah. Anyway, it was weird.
It was a little weird.
The weird thing is, Blade's pedigree is such that I do think a harder R is kind of baked into it. I can see the thing is, I don't think people go to these for winning dialogue necessarily.
Right.
You want it to be a snappy script. You want it to be a little like punchy, but it doesn't. But I don't know if I think that Blade might need the R.
What if they do a buddy cop of Blade and Deadpool?
No.
that's the Blade movie.
No.
If they do it as an R thing, I think, as I say, have said that they're, or we think they're going to do with Deadpool.
Yeah, they're Deadpool has
probably the R, yeah.
I think they kind of do like what they were initially doing with Marvel Max comics, which is it's kind of on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Blade's not going to necessarily show up in an Avengers movie, but like somebody else from the Marvel movies could show up in Blade.
Did he work for MI6 at some point?
Oh, probably.
Blade?
Yeah.
Winter Soldier could probably show up in Blade, right?
Yeah, Winter Soldier and Blade would make a certain amount of sense.
I'm just trying to think of, like, because you don't want to retread any territory that the original Blade movies did.
I think that's true.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to figure out. But I think Shang-Chi works for MI6, so that's not, you know, too much.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they'll do with it.
But
it's one of those ones that I feel like, and I already have one, but I feel like a TV series of Blade would have made more sense than a movie.
Yeah. But I never watched that TV series.
They did have a TV show played by Sticky Fingers.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Oh. I forgot that was a thing that happened.
Yep.
But now we're getting, is it Mahershala?
Mahershala Ali, which is great.
Mahershala Ali, yes.
He will be fantastic.
Yes, he will be amazing.
Last bit of news here, they are doing, Magpie Games is doing a new RPG that is set in the world of Avatar Last Airbender and Korra, which is super cool.
Yeah.
I
imagine that will be, among other things, a great source book.
Magpie are the guys who did that survival game that we played... Our last best hope.
Oh.
And they do a game where you're dragons. They're what's weird is these guys do mostly indie games.
Huh.
This is like their biggest license. I'm surprised that they got the license for it. Yeah. But they're gonna do there's two books. One is gonna be is the core book, slated for February 2022, and then in August there's the Republic City, and in February there's in 2023 there's gonna be the Spirit World.
Oh, cool.
So that's their plan. Interesting.
Yeah.
As long as you can create your amalgamation of animal character.
Yeah, for sure.
As your little friend.
I only want to play if I can play a platypus bear.
Yeah, no, that's mostly... pretty much all sounds good.
Yeah.
I mean, that world is kind of ripe for more stories.
Oh,
so,
yeah,
I
for
mean,
sure.
You can just do whatever you want.
Yep. And I would probably, even if I wouldn't run their system, I would probably pick it up, if only as a source book for the different nations and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And to see how much Uncle Iroh can lift press.
all right, that's it for our news. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, February 10th, and there's not a lot of number ones this week.
Well, we've talked about it, like, DC is largely occupied with this sort of future state, not only for, like, another few weeks or a month or whatever, and then Marvel has the King in Black, which is sort of tying up some of their focus right now.
Right.
But there are indies, and I don't know, there might be a new Marvel or DC, I can't remember.
Yeah, well, there is King in Black, Black Panther number one, which is the... first sort of, other than the Agents of Wakanda thing they did, this is the first King Black Panther that's not like set in space for a while.
Oh, right.
Because he's been off doing international...
That was a weird focus that Ta-Nehisi Coates chose.
It's still going. He hasn't finished it yet.
It's still in space.
Yeah, he's still in space.
It's been going for like 3 years, I think.
So if you would like to see Black Panther and Wakanda in a like modern day sensibility fighting space dragons,
you could have been reading Jason Aaron's Avengers. He's in there.
That's true.
But the point is, there's more Black Panther material.
Black Panther series. That's number one. That's not number one, but Eternals number two, which was one of the big Marvel launches, came out this week.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's just a reminder, Kieran Gillen, who's written popular books here, most notably Wicked and Divine, but Die found a huge audience.
Yep.
He wrote Young Avengers.
He also seems to be channeling his inner Hickman.
Yeah, it definitely feels sort of Hickman-esque. Also, the big reveal of the first issue that we didn't want to give away was that Thanos shows up, which makes sense because Thanos wasn't Eternal. He's the guy who kills Mentor.
Right.
Yep.
Although there's Mentor. there's a question of whether he's a true Eternal.
Right.
But yes, and that's a good call. Like, The Eternals are a pretty obscure kind of Kirby creation. Not obscure, but a little bit. And so a little bit of star power to kind of give it some focus is a good idea.
Yeah.
I do like the Icarus story they're telling, though. It's like the most interesting that character's been in a long time.
He's kind of, I mean, they're definitely riffing on the Fourth War a little bit, because Icarus feels a lot like Orion. He's sort of angry warrior type.
And is this Cersei, is this the Cersei that was in the Avengers run?
Okay. Same Cersei. Right. Okay. Although we say same, but they've made the point that when these characters are reborn, they can change. The short way to think about it would be like the Doctor in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
It's like, it is all supposed to be the same guy, but lots of tweaks to it when they rebirth.
There's also a weird Chinatown and Geostorm movie reference.
Yeah, there's one of these guys making movie references. It's so weird.
Did you say Geostorm?
Yeah, I'm talking Gerard Butler Geostorm.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they talk about like a phenomenon of the Geostorm coming, and then he starts referencing the movie, and I'm like... And all I can think is that Kieran Gillen must have liked that on a cheesy level and wanted to work with
it. It was a bad movie. But
he does not seem like a guy who would be into that.
That's weird.
He's kind of a hipster dude.
Yeah.
Anyway. I sort of appreciate the weirdness of it, though.
New stuff, though. Black Hammer Visions number one came out this week. This is a new anthology series where Jeff Lemire is going to let other people write the stories of Black Hammer.
Just for anybody that hasn't read Black Hammer, that's kind of like his indie superhero comics with a little bit of indie edge to it, but also definitely a reflection of Marvel and DC types.
Well, it's funny. It's not unlike what Busiek was doing with Astro City, where it is referencing other things, because this one Patton Oswalt writes, and it's got superhero elements, but he's doing a Ghost World riff.
Yeah, it is two girls on the day of graduation who are kind of finding themselves drifting apart a little bit. Yeah. They were both kind of outcast, and one of them is leaning a little less outcasty, and they realize, in sort of reflecting in sort of flashbacks, that their lives have intersected with a strange girl who we will know and we have see for as the girl from Black Hammer, who is like Shazam in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
If Shazam was a person who, as in their mortal form, was an adult who grew up, but every time they said the magic word, they turned into a little powerful kid.
Yep.
And so, and she's been in Black Hammer, was stuck in that form. So here we see her, like, going to school, but she has, like, the mind of a 50-year-old.
Yeah.
And it's definitely sometimes played for kind of dark humor, because, you know, she swears, she smokes, she's kind of crazy. And that sort of, they use that to put the other girls' friendship, who are just original characters, I think, mm-hmm. in kind of in relief, you know, kind of highlights their friendship or the way they're sort of slipping apart.
I really liked this. I thought this was a really good issue.
It speaks well to the possibilities of the series. You know, I don't always like when somebody who's so identified with a series kind of gives any creative control up.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that there are some notable luminaries, like Geoff Johns is going to write the next issue, and then who else?
There's, I don't know.
But they are notable writers. Oh, Chip Zdarsky is one of the ones.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to get one, and that guy can write.
So the other thing is interesting, Patton Oswalt is really doing good on comics right now. Like, this was really good. His MODOK series has been good.
Yeah.
It turns out maybe Patton Oswalt's good at writing comics.
Maybe he'll come on over and end up doing, the Zdarsky thing, and instead of doing humorous comics, we'll end up writing, like, serious stuff.
He's got to be popular enough, he can't do comics just for the love of it, right? Like, nobody they can pay him enough to be worth it.
Probably not. Although I think sometimes people just love him that much.
Yeah,
we'll see. He's definitely a comics guy.
Then there was Kaboom's new book, Orcs.
Yeah, they like likened it to sort of like what's that? Adventure Time. Or no, wait.
Now, they are creators. It is someone who worked in the Adventure Time comics, but
no. What's the other adventure comic? That's the D&D.
Rat Queens?
No.
Bravest Warriors. I don't know.
It's in our indie section. I thought it started with A.
Adventure Zone.
Adventure Zone.
Oh,
that was
Yeah.
They likened it in the description a little bit to Adventure Zone. But if it's Kaboom, that means it's a little more all ages-y.
Yeah. It's kind of fun. There's an orc who gets on the wrong side of a siren. And there's some. It was kind of fun.
It also had that Adventure Time kind of art, which, or not exactly like that, but something of that quality, and I like the art, at least at a quick glance.
Yeah, it's fun. Then there's Image's new book, Radiant Black, which is by Kyle Higgins, who has written a lot of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers comics.
Yep.
He says that was kind of an inspiration here, But the first issue is just kind of like a couple of buddies. It's like a guy who left to become a writer. It opens, the panel opens with him looking at his cell phone, and it's got his checking balance is $46.98, and his credit card is -$38,486. And Dave was like, this is giving me anxiety.
Yeah, like, just instantly. And I know it is meant to, like, have something of that, the same way that Peter Parker was emblematic of, like, the struggling, young college student or whatever in his day. This guy is a... He's not Gen Z. He's not a Zoomer. He's
millennial.
He's millennial. His life's a little effed. Millennials.
He returns home to live with his parents, an old high school buddy, because it's like his high school, it's where he grew up. Old high school buddy shows up. They go out drinking. They're talking about his failed writing career. And then he finds something that gives him, like, this superpowered suit. And it looks like... They referenced Invincible, and I think I can sort of see that. Yeah. It's like a ground-level look at superheroes. At the end, there's a reveal that maybe the supervillain's already there. The art is really good. It's Mr. Marcelo Costa, who I don't know, but I really like this first issue. I'm kind of curious to see where they go from here.
Seems like a good one for people to check out if they're looking for superheroes that are a little different from the Marvel DC norm.
Other than that, that's like the big stuff. I did really enjoy the second issue of King and Black Thunderbolts, which is like the Kingpin's elite team going around New York for a thing. Always good to have another issue of Daredevil. There's a new issue of Amazing Spider-Man. Third issue of Taskmaster by Jed McKay really does nail down the... McKay's the guy who wrote Black Cat, and this feels like him doing a Black Cat-esque take on Taskmaster. I'm really enjoying this series. And I think that's all I have.
Yeah, I just had a couple of X books. There's a Excalibur where they're dealing with sort of the loss of Betsy Braddock.
What did she?
She disappeared after. We don't know what happened to her after X of Swords.
She off running Otherworld now.
Yeah. Then there's a third issue of Sword, which is tying into King and Black. This is all about the character Manifold, sort of Australian lineage of that has kinship to the mutant gateway.
Okay.
There is an issue of X-Force, which is all about Quentin Quire, so if he is a favorite character of yours, definitely recommend this one. And then there's an issue of Wolverine Black, White, and Blood. This one's actually got some really good stories in it, written by John Ridley, Donnie Cates, and Jed McKay.
Okay, alright.
Beautiful art by, like, Chris Piccolo and Jesus Sayas, and, yeah, I'm just enjoying those little snippets of Wolverine stories, him doing Wolverine-y type things.
Nice. All right. I don't have any additional ones to add to that.
I should also mention we got second printings of Ha Ha, the new Image book, and of the third printing of Star Wars High Republic number 1, if you missed out on that one.
Nice. And a few second printings of the Future State books as well.
Yeah.
Also, this week it's got some good second issues of, like, Robin Eternal and Justice League. If you're a Grant Morrison Justice League fan, I would definitely recommend checking it out. Good.
I think we have most of the Future State at this point, if not all of it.
Yeah, I honestly think it's sort of a sparked a something in me to really enjoy the DC Universe again. And, you know, seeing what's coming after, which we're going to be seeing in a couple... Randy and I have read a couple of the
Are these mostly books. The people who are writing Future State going to continue on the book, most even if it's not
about
same?
Half and half, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's a good way for people to kind of get a sense of, you know, the... Maybe, if nothing else, their vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'm enjoying it.
Yep. By which I mean vibe from the Detroit Justice League.
all right, that takes care of Comics of the Week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about some movies and TV. All right, so we want to talk, Dave. You've been watching this movie or this show, Big Sky. Is it Netflix?
It's I'm watching it on
ABC show.
Yeah, so it's on Hulu.
Oh,
Like Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist runs on ABC shows on Hulu.
Okay,
I don't know exactly what day it arrives. I kind of randomly started watching it because I saw, like, one of our mutual friends, Evan Bryce, who's done some great art here, our most regular artist at all our, whenever we do our All Ages Awesomeness.
Yep.
He has a fondness for trashy TV, and he was talking about this.
And trashy movies.
And the premise he mentioned actually sounded kind of fun to me. I knew it was from at least a guy with a pedigree, David E. Kelly, who's been producing shows since the 80s.
McBeal.
Allie McBeal, Boston Public and Boston Legal or whatever. Yeah, all just a ton of stuff. And it is a trashy show, but I found myself enjoying it. At least most of the time. I'm right now thinking I will. It's kind of a crime show.
Sorry. Something weird happened on my computer.
Is it still recording?
No, it's recording.
Okay,
sorry.
So
I just assume Randy is watching things while we're talking about a show that he has not seen. Because I can throw in on this too. I've seen them all. So
okay. You watched Big Sky?
Yeah, I'm current on Big Sky.
I've watched none of Big Sky.
Chime in a second, Nick.
It's cheesy.
Yeah, you can help me. I was about to hit the premise.
Go ahead.
Okay. Basic premise on this show is it's set in Montana and follows the kidnapping of two girls and a trans prostitute who, by the way, when I first saw this, I was like, it looked like they had killed her, and I was like, this show is such trash, I ain't gonna watch it.
Right.
But they did not. She's actually a survivor and a major character in it, and they, I think, treated pretty decently.
Yeah.
With the story.
It's essentially a human trafficking show.
Yes, it is. But for people who've seen the movie Split, you know how you see the sort of the girls in peril under the...
Yeah.
Who's the bad guy?
Professor Xavier.
Yeah.
I can never remember
James
his
McAvoy.
Name. James McAvoy.
Yeah. There's when it's showing their portion of the story, it's a little bit like that, where there is a lot of menace and threat, but there is not like it is not quite trigger warning sexual assaulty stuff. It is creepy and disturbing. And meanwhile, the people pursuing them is a kind of an unusual duo, largely of a. A woman whose husband that she was separated from had been looking into this disappearance, and he himself disappeared. And
played by Ryan Phillippe.
Yep.
Huh.
Nick, I don't think it's wrong. Any problem with sort of mentioning?
Well, it's hilarious because he was promoted big in this show because Ryan Phillippe doing a TV show is not like nothing.
Right. Ryan Phillippe anything at this point?
They were able to lean into his name a little bit and sort of hey, here's somebody you know, at least.
But the big spoiler was actually revealed on, like, a talk show when the two actresses were talking.
Oh, shit,
did they accidentally did it.
He gets executive decision Steven Seagal
at the end of the first episode.
And that is actually what made me decide to watch it, because there is a sheriff in it who seems like he's, like, and he's one of the...
He's a state trooper.
Who's like kind of a...
He's a character actor that I
He's
I
a character
to...
actor who's very much at the heart of a lot of, I think, kind of the fun in the show. Because he's kind of a folksy guy, and it turns out he is part of the human trafficking ring.
Oh, okay.
But, like, the guy is talking to him, and he kind of, like, says, he's like, all right, let's go check out this, you know, let's go drive to the location, see what we can find.
It's John Carroll Lynch, who's been in everything. He was in Zodiac and the movie Fargo.
Was he one of the... He was the suspect in Zodiac.
He was.
He's a creepy guy.
Shutter Island.
Yeah, okay, he's a creepy dude. Well, yeah, in the end of the first episode, he just turns and blows Ryan Phillippe's brains out in a pretty gory shot.
Yeah.
So you've got his separated wife pursuing this, and she's what, an ex-cop?
Ryan Phillippe's current wife, because they're not ex-wife. It's a current wife that is... They're kind of on the outs with one another, and he's sleeping with the... basically a private detective.
Right. So you've got these basically the wife and the woman he cheated with and they know what the deal is. They find out working together to investigate him and the girls.
Yes.
So that's your basic premise, and you do see a fair amount of the two key people in the trafficking thing, one of which is a creepy truck driver guy.
Yep.
Who's like kind of almost a nerdy looking dude. Imagine if like Tobey Maguire was playing him with, like, slicked back hair and kind of...
He's basically the one picking up all the women at various truck stops.
And the state trooper guy, what, kind of arranges, I guess, for them. They're supposed to be sold to in Canada.
And, like, all, like, television shows, there's subplots within subplots dealing with, like, the state trooper's wife and the girls who are... hijacked or kidnapped, essentially. I actually thought they did a great job with all of those characters.
Yeah.
And sort of, they weren't dumb. They were showing that they were very smart about their situation.
One sister in particular is very smart. And the other one, who's like the... she even self-described sort of as the pretty one.
Yeah.
kind of you get to see her grow over time.
Yeah.
Among the, I want to say here's the, one of the pulpiest things that happens in it. There's a escape scenario that goes bad where one of them gets shot in the leg with an arrow.
Yep.
And it starts to get infected. And they, to deal with the infection, since their captors don't have any medicine for them at the time, she goes, does the medieval thing of letting maggots get into the wound to eat the dead flesh.
Yep.
So that it doesn't necrotize.
I don't like this.
Yes. They don't show too much of it, but they did show it a little bit, yeah, and it was creepy. Like, that's the kind of show this is. but the other time, there's a fair amount of character stuff. Now, here's the interesting thing, Nick. They resolve a fair amount. They're seven episodes into, I don't know how long it's going to be.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot has happened.
Yeah, but there are avenues that, that basically can explode kind of into bigger things.
Well, what's interesting is some characters have died. There's been...
other characters who thought should have been dead are back.
Right, yes. And,
but not Ryan Philby, he's
some
dead.
Some major plot things got resolved.
Yeah.
And so I'm not quite sure, like, where they're going to go. I saw it's based on a series of novels called, like, the Highway series.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
And so the fact that it is a series leads me to believe it's like, oh, well, do these women end up pursuing the entire human trafficking ring,
that's
I
my
assume?
Guess.
Nick, let me ask you this. Early on, there's mention of a cult. In fact, they even visit the cult's the site.
Yep.
And you see this kind of a creepy thing going on with, like, older men hooking up with, like, younger women in this cult. And, I was like, is that a red herring? Because they haven't been a big part of it, but I, like, feel like they set it up. There was a...
I'm sure it'll
clearly they made a
involved.
Set and stuff for their compound.
I'm sure it'll be involved in some fashion.
You know, this makes me want to play Far Cry 5 or whatever, which was set in this kind of, in that kind of, in and around, like, Montana, I think, and had cults and stuff going on.
I know this is a weird thing to say, but beautiful cinematography.
So that was the other thing that kind of drew me to it, is because that was, like, I watched the trailer for it, and, like, every once in a while there's just some amazing establishing shots, and I just love it.
It's gorgeous.
I don't know if I can fully recommend the show.
I think if you're wanting something that you don't have to think too much about... And
it reminded me of when I was watching Bates Motel.
Yeah, it's very escapist.
Yeah.
If your escapism deals with human trafficking, I guess.
You know...
It's Disney's next park, right?
You know...
Well, it is... I mean, it is ABC. It is Disney.
Do y'all know how many people...
Welcome to Mickey's World of Human Trafficking.
Do y'all know how many people listen to true crime podcasts these days?
Yeah,
that is... That, CSI, NCIS, all that stuff, man, there is... That is a cottage industry, so...
This isn't even on at, like, 9 o'clock. This is on at, like, 8.
Someone's gonna make, like, a Westworld that's, like, crime world where you go in and solve grisly murders.
That's not a thing already. I mean, with the pandemic, I guess I know. Still, once the pandemic is over, that's definitely going to happen.
Yeah, we're going to have Rose Gallery Crime World.
I can't go wrong. Anyway, I'm going to say a qualified recommendation for Big Sky. If you like weird crime, twisted crime stories, David E. Kelly shows, beautiful Montana scenery, or watching character actors do their thing, it might be worth a shot.
I watched, meanwhile, a 30-year-old movie
that you had not seen, though.
Is it how long ago was this?
82?
Okay, so almost 30-year-old.
Was it 82?
I'm 90% sure. It could be 81.
That sounds about right. So yeah, I watched for the first time ever 48 Hours.
You know, speaking of buddy cop stuff like we were earlier.
This is the prototypical...
One of the quintessential ones.
82.
So, Nick put us all onto this Letterboxd app, the movie app where you, like, rate movies.
Yeah.
And one of the things you can do is make a watch list. So I have a watch list of movies that I've been wanting to see. But if I came across a movie, I'm like, oh, I can't rate this one because I haven't seen it. I do kind of want to see it. I put it on the watch list. And what I was finding is when I started looking for things... I would be jumping around, and eventually I'd wind up just watching, like, a Mad About You rewatch or something instead.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to start watching these just in alphabetical order.
Oh, wow.
So the first movie on my list was 22 Jump Street, which I have not seen, but is not streaming anywhere. So I skipped to the next one, which was 48 Hours.
You're hitting the numerical portion of the alphabetical rate.
And that was streaming on, I want to say, either Stars or Showtime.
Okay.
For
those who were not around in the 80s?
Yep.
This is Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy.
Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy. Nick Nolte is a cop chasing down James Remar.
Yep. And it's somewhat, you know, James Remar, who plays scumbags throughout his career. But sometimes they're scumbags with hearts of gold.
This guy's a real scumbag.
Lately, I've seen that a little bit more often. Yeah. He plays like on, what was that show that was set after a nuclear bomb drop, limited nuclear exchange?
Mesquite All Rich?
Yeah, what was that called? Well, whatever that was, he was the girlfriend of Skeet Ulrich. He was the dad who like ran a car chop shop, but he had a code of honor, and he tends to do this. He's like scary guy in this.
Yeah,
though.
he's like murderous guy. Like he basically the movie starts with him escaping prison with the help of his buddy, and he kills a bunch of the guards.
Oh, that's right. This is movie is like essentially an action comedy.
Yeah,
but like the action stuff is Jericho. The action stuff is pretty serious.
Yeah, it's There's some, like, when he gets out of prison, there's a shootout between him and some other cops.
Yeah.
In the hotel, and, like, people get shot, and he kills a bunch of cops.
Yeah.
Including a very young, the guy from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, Jonathan, what's his name? You know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
He's in Beverly Hills Cop. He's in Beverly Hills Cop, too. It's probably not even Jonathan. Jonathan Banks.
Jonathan Banks.
So Jonathan Banks
is a great actor.
Yep. He's one of the cops. Nick Nolte is like, he takes his little squad, and he's the one who survives the shootout.
Yep.
So he's like, I have to get him. So he goes to his old cellmate, played by Eddie Murphy, and gets him out for 48 hours to track him down.
Yep.
And Eddie Murphy spends the 48 hours, he's like, look, you got to get me a woman. I've been in jail. I mean, he's going to go back, and I think he gets out in like a month. Like, he's not supposed to be, he's not like a serious felon. He's just like...
Right.
But it's basically these two guys who do not like each other.
Nick Nolte is at his surliest.
And his racistest.
Yeah, that's right.
Man, 82. This movie does not, in some ways, you're like, in the 80s, they just let people throw the N-word around.
Yeah.
But this is definitely a breakout for Eddie Murphy. This is a lot of his Beverly Hills Cop persona coming out here. It's
honestly also the prototype for buddy cop movie.
It is the prototype. I don't know if there was a buddy cop before this.
I feel like there had to have been something in the 70s, but I can't think of what it was. So
I think all the 70s were Lone Wolf Cops.
Yeah, this might have been it.
Yeah.
But there's some the plot is sort of a slightly convoluted this guy, you know, the guy had some has money that Eddie Murphy's character wants a piece of, and that's why he's helping tracking him down. That happens in westerns and all this kind of the notion of the gang that had money and they're now that they've either somebody died or somebody went to prison, they all want to pick up the money now.
Yeah.
But also like Nolte is out for revenge and wants to get this guy who killed all his cop buddies. And so it's basically a manhunt kind of movie.
Yep.
And it's really I was surprised by seeing like Denise Crosby is in there as girlfriend of one of the cons.
And who's the Weasel Man?
Weasel Man.
The guy from the Dreamscape and stuff.
Oh yeah, that guy.
Lee.
He plays Luther.
Yeah, Luther.
He played Luther in something else too, in the Warriors.
In the Warriors, yeah, he's like one of the most famous weasel character actors that there are.
Yep.
I always like him in everything. David. Shit.
He has three names.
Yeah, David.
You're supposed to know all the Daves, Dave.
I know Daves. I can't tell you every David.
Another David. Yeah.
Anyway,
he's
if you ever seen the Warriors, he's the Warriors come out to play guy.
Yep. but yeah, it's. I thought maybe it would be a little dated.
That's what I was wondering. Like you said, there's like some racism and stuff in there that was front and center.
Yeah.
But like, how did it overall hold up as a movie?
Really well. It's. I mean, Walter Hill, I think, co-scripted and he did the Warriors, and this feels. It feels a little more 70s than 80s. It does feel like tail end of 70s. But 70s movies tend to be slow for me, and this is not slow. This is definitely starting to get into that 80s punchy movie.
If I remember correctly, isn't this like Eddie Murphy's first like movie?
I think this is his first movie.
He was doing a SNL.
It would have been pretty close to Trading Places, but I think Trading Places was 83.
Yeah, I think this was his first movie. But he's great here. Nick Nolte is fantastic playing sort of a surly detective guy.
You know, Nick Nolte was kind of one of my, in some ways, go-to guys in the 80s because of this and Extreme Prejudice and a few other things he did.
He was an action guy for a while.
Yep.
But yeah, it held up really well.
David Patrick Kelly.
There's a lot of good action scenes. There's some great dialogue. There's some really funny stuff.
I always remember, like, the one, like, I would, like, go to watch it. This was on HBO all the time when I was a kid, and I watch it incessantly. When they go into the bar.
Yeah.
And Eddie Murphy, does he ask to borrow his badge?
He borrows his badge and is going to pretend to be a cop.
Yeah, and he gets to kind of lord it around a little bit over a bunch of, like racist a-holes.
It's a redneck bar, yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. Super fun. I recommend it for people, especially if you have a fondness for, like, I looked at this, and the movies I like Running Scared and Midnight Run and all the buddy cop movies, Lethal Weapon, yeah. all those, they definitely draw from this.
Yep. Yeah, and there is a certain stripe of the kind of R-rated, slightly edgier ones yeah. where, yeah, you're going to laugh, but the bad guys are going to have some threat to them.
Yeah, they don't make this so much anymore. Like, even, I guess the closest thing would be like Hobbs and Shaw, but that kind of thing is still a little over the top.
Yeah, is Bad Boys kind of like that?
Yeah, Bad Boys is the closest thing, yeah. I have not watched another 48 Hours. I don't know if you guys would recommend or not recommend that.
I don't remember much about it, but that's probably... I know
it's a lesser outing.
I think I skipped it because I knew it was a lesser outing.
And I don't know if it's lesser outing or terrible.
Yeah.
Like, is it Beverly Hills Cop 2 lesser or Beverly Hills Cop 3 lesser? That's the thing I need to know.
There's Escape from L.A. Ooh, yeah. There's sometimes you don't want to even visit them.
Yeah. I haven't seen Beverly Hills Cop 3 for that reason. I like 1. I like 2. But people have said 3 is terrible, and so I'm like, man, much I love the characters.
Don't taint it.
I don't know if I want to taint
it. I've watched Beverly Hills Cop 3. It's fine. Yeah? I mean, it's not great.
Okay, all right. jumping the topic just a little bit, Dave, you have finally acquired a Switch.
Yes. Yes, I did. The somewhat unexpected game I found myself playing was not like The Legend of Zelda. I did pick up Mario Kart, and I intend to do a sort of a dive on that and like... I need to play Nick and anybody else I know who's got one and mm-hmm. destroy them. Mm-hmm. I will be playing as Luigi because he's my new main man because I did pick up Luigi's Mansion 3. This was a series that started on the GameCube, I believe.
Yeah, it did.
And instead of being like a side-scroller Mario type thing or even quite like the open-world 3D Mario game sometimes, this is all set inside a giant haunted tower, actually. And it has the vibe of sort of a Lego game, you know, that sort of lightheartedness. Yeah. The ghosts in it are not scary. It is not like playing Silent Hill. But it is kind of fun and pleasantly spooky as if you have gone into a spooky Mickey Mouse cartoon or something like that.
Sure.
But the gameplay is really what makes it. The story, such as it is that Luigi thought he had won tickets for like a free weekend at this not haunted mansion, but at this super luxurious tower. Only it turns out his old enemy, King Boo, from the Mario games,
sure.
Big Bad from the previous Luigi's Mansion game, has taken it over, and he, in the night, kidnaps Princess Peach, who was with him, Mario, and a couple of the Toads who are off chilling. It was going to be a big vacation for him. They got kidnapped by ghosts.
Dave, did Luigi's car break down outside this mansion, and... King Boo was like, if you clean this whole place, I'll fix your car.
It was not an adaptation of the Nicolas Cage movie. No, in the opening sequence, and when you're learning the controls and stuff, you are in the lobby unpacking your bags and stuff like this, except that you can see that the like bellhop and the concierge and everybody else you see is in fact a ghost. It's just that the players don't notice it. They have like masks on.
Human masks,
yes.
Sure.
And they just don't notice it because it's a cartoon kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Now, once you get loose, there's a mad scientist type guy who helps Luigi out, and it's very much a Ghostbusters riff. Except that he literally vacuums up the ghosts with this kind of like high-tech vacuum thing. And the way it happens, though, you actually have a few different tools, and the game grows in sophistication. So early on, it felt almost a little too simple. But now I went through something that was as complex as anything I ever did in Portal, like including some of the crazier puzzles. And what you do is the basic way, when you find a ghost, sometimes you have to look at them using sort of UV lights and stuff like that. You have a flashlight thing that will flash them and freeze them in place, at least the basic ghosts. There's all kinds of different ghosts. And then you turn on the vacuum and you grab their tails, their little ghost tails, and they'll get partially pulled in, and usually they're not ready to get sucked in immediately. So you then hit another button and it like whacks them back and forth the same way the Hulk slung Loki around. So imagine if like when you partially vacuum up Slimer and then you beat him for a little while on the ground, then when he's tired, you suck him in, if you know what I mean.
Dave?
Yes?
Talk to me about Gooigi.
All right. I was not aware before this that there was a character named Goo-EG, but there is. I believe the first time appearing in this game, some of the ways you solve puzzles is, like, you need essentially a second person. You need somebody who can maybe go through a grating or, like, into, like, sewers or something like that. Guiji is the ectoplasm version of Luigi. He's formed from a little ectoplasm tank on your back, and Luigi sort of slumps and just looks like he's asleep, while Guiji forms up, and he looks just like him, but made out of green goo. Imagine a Slimer Luigi.
Yep.
And he can go off and do other stuff. He is vulnerable to water. If he gets water hits him, he dissolves back and just goes back into the thing.
He looks pretty awesome, actually.
If you play a two-player game, you just play as the other player plays as him. And there's a lot of puzzles where, like, you have to kind of use them in tandem. When you switch to him, whatever Luigi was doing, he continues doing. So if he was, like, trying to vacuum something up, say it's a big ghost and you need two people on it, he will still stay vacuuming, even though he's kind of slumped. And then, but Guiji will add the secondary extra force that you need to pull the ghost in or whatever. There are a lot of complicated puzzles, and this tower is super fun to go through because there's all these thematic rooms, like big garden areas. There's a TV, there's like a movie studio in there. There's stuff that, the movie studio had a super complicated but very fun series, almost like a, what do you call those Rube Goldberg inventions.
Okay.
I felt like I had to do this crazy Rube Goldberg thing to make it all work out, and then when it did, it was very satisfying. The vibe of the game is just kind of fun, spooky. But the puzzles and the graphics are kind of what I'm there for. Even as you kind of prowl around through the hotel seeking ghosts, you sort of do like what you do in Lego games, which is say you walk into a room, you can vacuum up just about everything, including curtains off their rods, blankets and things. You sometimes have to do the same pull you do on ghosts to suck those in. And, like, you'll get coins and things like that, which you can use for little upgrades and other cool things.
Okay.
It is not a deep upgrade thing like, you know, Arkham Knight. There's just a few fun things that you can do. But, like, I found myself really enjoying the game. You know, if the theme is not too, like, kind of lightweight for you, it's a super... The gameplay in it, I would say, is super strong. And it grows in sophistication as you go along. It actually weirdly reminded me, Randy, you know how they made those Harry Potter deck-building games?
Yeah, yeah.
And it goes through the 7 years at Hogwarts. And the first year you're there, if you've played this, is kind of real simple. It's like, this is the most basic deck-building game stuff you've ever done. You might even think, maybe I shouldn't have bought this.
Right.
But once you get to year 2 and 3, you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. Oh, I see how it works. Yeah. It is very much like that format. And I feel like I'm at a little past halfway at this point, and super loving it.
So, does everyone have a Guiji inside them? Is that a thing? Do we all have an inner Guiji we just need to release?
Yes. Okay. What I would like to know is, really, if Russell Sinclair has ever released his inner Guiji.
You know, there's that quote, everyone is fighting a battle you know nothing about.
There are two Luigis in you. There are two Luigis.
One is a Guiji.
Two Luigis in you.
Yes.
Anyway, Randy, I don't know. I don't have anything else other than that people should buy that. But do we have any other topics?
No. I think that'll do it for the week. Yeah. Let's just close out on a note of there are two Luigis inside all of you.
Yes.
Until next week.
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.